Previously on 24.
You killed Tariq.
You can't let Father know. He wants me dead because I messed up with Debbie.
You ordered Tariq to kill him. To kill our own son.
Nothing will stand in the way of what needs to be done. Not him, not you.
Your father's following us.
What?
It was the only way I could save you.
I think I got it. This is really it. I can turn off the override and stop the remaining plans from melting down.
Did the best I could, so I hope it works.
So do I.
Edgar, what's going on? Why are some of the reactors still not shutting down?
Six of the reactors are immune to the kill sequence.
Contact Bauer. Either he finds the people responsible for planning the override, or we're looking at a nuclear holocaust.
Bauer and Audrey Raines left here about 5 minutes ago.
Where'd they go?
Felsted Security.
You're going to need to set things up on your end. When Jack Bauer and Audrey Raines are killed, CTU is going to know that someone inside leaked their location. Divert suspicions.
Fine.
The override device maintains heat levels within the reactor. They can melt down every one of those power plants. The man you saw when you were being held captive, right now he's our only lead.
Stop there. I think that's him.
They're trying to seal us off.
Shouldn't we call CTU?
No. CTU's gotta be compromised. That's the only way they'd know we were here.
And who are you calling?
The only person I can trust right now.
I'm empty.
Tony!
The following takes place between 2 p.m. and 3 p.m.
I'm Steve Cronish.
And I'm Peter Lenkoff. Steve and I wrote this episode. Seems so long ago.
It's been sealed off. We can't get in.
Did you send a list of the six affected cities to the president?
Yes, sir.
What about evacuation procedures?
We've already alerted the National Guard. We're just waiting to see how the president wants us to proceed.
One of the keys of this episode was bringing Tony back into the show, into CTU. He's a really well-liked character, and we felt this was the perfect opportunity to do that.
Not be effective with the six remaining reactors.
Not going to be effective. What exactly does that mean?
I'm afraid it means that we could have six nuclear disasters on our hands.
What are the casualty projections if all six plants melt down?
450,000 deaths in the first 24 hours. Long-range estimates in the low millions. And that's not taken into account the results.
Steve and I sat together in my office, and we knocked out the script. I think we spent about a week together doing the first draft.
That process isn't the way we normally do it. I mean, if it's a tandem script, I mean, one guy will write act one, the other guy will write act two, and that type of thing. But in this situation, we thought we would try it this way, and it worked.
Well, we had fun doing it. I remember that. Or you had more fun than me. I remember I was doing the typing, and you were sort of pacing back and forth, playing with the balls in the office.
What's going on?
First off, sir, I want you to know that Audrey and I are safe, but there was an attempt made on our life at Felsted Security. A group of assassins, well-armed, well-trained, took out our entire security detail. You're going to need to send a forensic unit over to identify the bodies, but I don't want anyone at CTU to know.
Why not?
Because I think someone over at CTU is complicit.
Actually, Peter and I are both sort of early risers, so we get started pretty early in the day, and then, you know, go until we realized that even to ourselves we weren't making any sense. Then we would quit for the day and try it again tomorrow.
Sometimes we were at each other's throats, and we just ended it right then. And then took it outside.
He told me I couldn't write. I tell him he couldn't write.
Well, he actually told me he couldn't catch because we were playing football at lunchtime. So I think that was more like it.
Ken Girardi's an old friend, Canadian director, really good director, good guy. So we were happy that we could bring him down here and do these two episodes.
Okay.
I'm almost getting used to this.
Yeah. Tony, is it possible that we could have been followed?
No, we're clear. Where are we going?
We felt like we had Tony in a pretty good place to start off his reappearance on the show. I mean, a guy who had had troubles when he left CTU at the end of last season. He was arrested, fired from government service, and really sort of went off the deep end personally. So we thought that we could use Jack and use Tony's involvement in the story to hopefully pull himself out of that kind of morass that he was in.
You know what? Never mind. Why don't you tell me what this is all about?
And I think you saw through the way Kiefer and Carlos played these scenes that there was a real sort of underlying bond between them, and that transcended the actual story and really got to them as people. I thought they pulled that off very well.
I got caught up in it. Yeah, well, listen to me very carefully. I don't want to get caught up in it. So you do whatever you need to do at my place. I'm staying out of it, all right?
Understood.
Just like Jack tried to stay out of it at the beginning of the season. You can't stay
out
of it.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that they recognized in each other, that they were similar people along those lines. I don't know that much about what government salaries are, but I don't think any of them are doing it for the money. While we work to regain control over these facilities, and I think as far as the whole nuclear threat, I mean, clearly that is something that we live in a time when, you know, that's one of the worst nightmares that people can imagine, would be some sort of terrorist group getting control of nuclear plants and the ability, if you can cause explosions and meltdowns and what have you, to kill potentially millions of people without obviously being in that area so that they can't be captured. It's a terrifying prospect.
What about the hospitals north of there?
We should probably give thanks to Ann Kofel, who actually wrote a script this season. She did a lot of the research for us for the nuclear power plant stuff.
Station again. Okay.
The Americans have been able to shut down most of the reactors.
How many are under our control?
Six. More than enough to break their will. But I'm going to have to manage the override personally. Make sure those six melt down on schedule.
Is there anything I can do?
Yes. Take care of your mess.
You know, I think if you put yourself in the shoes of people like CTU or the National Guard or Civil Defense or what have you, I mean, the prospect of something going wrong with any of these plants is just so mind-boggling in terms of what you would do to try to safeguard people without causing wholesale panic. And it just goes beyond, I think, what any of us really want to consider. But in this day and age, I suppose anything is a possibility.
I love this scene. Beru's really rises to the occasion. At the beginning, you think he's this weak son. He's not going to toe the party line, and here he comes to his mom's rescue, and he's going to do whatever is necessary to protect his mother.
Yeah, I think seeing Dina shot and all that stuff was really the thing that pushed Beru's character over the line in terms of realizing that he has to go against what his father's been doing. Prior to this, you know, he was more or less, I mean, it was a gradual learning curve. I mean, the killing of his girlfriend and all that probably started him thinking that maybe this isn't such a great idea, but from a family perspective, this really was the beginning of the end.
Yes, Marianne?
I couldn't take your call. I was in a meeting.
Jack Bauer and Audrey Raines are still alive.
My information was accurate.
Yes, the location was correct, but they survived the
incident. That's very real, because who doesn't go into the bathroom to make a private call or a personal call? Except she didn't lock the bathroom door, so I wonder if she's worried that somebody could just walk in and overhear her.
Did we want somebody to come in? I don't remember.
No, I think we talked about it once, and she came up with an excuse, but I think we did that later on when she was down.
It was a government-issued door and didn't have a lock. Oh, see, that's why we didn't lock it, because then Sarah wouldn't have been able to come in.
I think we were going to have her originally come in a little bit earlier, just at the tail end of the conversation, and see it.
Yeah.
Sir, your assistant Scott Borman just arrived. Should I send him in?
So this is what Jack and Heller were talking about earlier in the story about setting a trap for the mole at CTU.
There's a big problem. Someone inside CTU is leaking information to someone on the outside.
What do you need me to do?
I need you to go to Erin Driscoll. Tell her that Jack Bauer is no longer at Felstead Security and that he's watching surveillance videos at the old CTU substation in Torrance.
Anything about when Jack will call in?
When they identify the man that Audrey saw.
I take it Jack and Audrey are nowhere near the CTU substation.
Right. We're trying to flush out the mole.
Then you'll need me to put a DOD commsat envelope around this place.
And if anyone sends out a communication containing the information you planted, that's the spy.
Yes, sir.
Let's go.
Very simple. They're going to get their man or woman with a very simple piece of disinformation.
Once the first draft is circulated among the rest of the staff, their comments, their notes, the general sense of whether or not we're moving in the right direction, all of that becomes kind of a group decision. And depending on whether there have been changes that have been discussed in terms of subsequent episodes, we would need to change our episode. It's a very fluid kind of process on this show, much more so than on a normal episodic show where each episode is more or less a standalone. These obviously depend on each other, provide the basis for the subsequent episodes. And so the rewriting process really doesn't end. I mean, it carries through production, it carries through virtual. I mean, you don't really stop writing on an individual episode until the final cut is made, because even in the editorial process, you are also either potentially adding new scenes or you are changing lines in the scenes that we've shot. So it's a constantly evolving process.
Could you be a little more specific?
We need to use Tony's computer.
What, they don't have computers where you work?
Listen, babe. We have a situation here, all right? They need to lie low.
We also wanted to give Tony this woman that he's living with. We wanted to give her a bit of an attitude going right into it, and I thought she handled it extremely well. This was not Ozzie and Harriet.
We can't take a chance.
What kind of chance? I work at a bar.
I'm sorry, Chad. We're not going to be long.
Look, stay as long as you want. I have a job. He doesn't.
That look from guy, Tony is
what a guy wants to hear when he's been sort of down and out. You know, he wants to have his
down
girlfriend
on his luck.
Tell him what a bum he is.
That look from Tony was great.
For a show not known for its humor, that I thought was one of the better comedic moments.
And I'm sure when this is all over, your boss will understand.
And if he doesn't,
I can have him killed.
Generally, the situation is so fraught with peril that, you know, actual jokes are not, just don't seem to be appropriate. But, you know, I think in many of the episodes, we at least have a moment where there's, if not a laugh, there's at least an ability to let the audience relax for a second. I think if every episode is just unremitting tension, you run the risk of wearing the audience out, I think, and a little moment of humor every now and then is something that I think is not only important to do from a filmmaking perspective, but it's also human nature to, even in a dark situation, try to come up with some appreciation for the humor of it. I think it's what people use to survive in a lot of difficult spots.
We're in.
Start the ball rolling with Driscoll?
Yep.
I think that's why people gravitate to Chloe. The levity that she brings to the scenes, I think people really find it a welcome relief to some of the other stuff that we do.
And with Chloe, I think, you know, her humor comes completely out of character. It's not so much snappy lines that are funny. It's
attitude.
It's her character, and she never plays it for laughs. She's very earnest, and that's out of that earnestness comes the humor, because she's usually so inappropriate in the way she responds to stressful situations.
So here we see Heller's assistant plant the disinformation, the false information that's going to hopefully bring the mole to light. Mole to light. That doesn't make any sense, but sounds good, I guess.
Moles don't like the light, I don't think.
No, they don't. That's why they stay burrowed in the ground.
I think in Aisha Tyler, you're looking at a major star. She can do really any kind of acting. I mean, she's really good dramatically. She's great with comedy. She's attractive, and I'm sure that her future is bright.
We saw him around here. There he is.
You sure that's him?
Yes.
I'm going to run this through the DC office.
Oh, my God, I was there last Friday.
Tony, she's on the phone. Can't ever make him calls.
And Kim Raver, I think, is brings a real believability to her situation. I think somebody who finds herself, I think she said almost with tears in her eyes in the beginning of this episode, I'm starting to get used to this. Somebody who really was completely unprepared for the events of the day, but has shown a lot of strength and the intelligence to work through this situation. She's also obviously quite attractive, and I think that's a great combination on this show.
Security.
On the way.
Thanks, guy.
Yes, Mr. Secretary.
Aaron, I'm sorry to report there's been a breach in CTU.
What?
The information Scott gave you about Jack is false.
What do you mean, false?
Jack and Audrey were ambushed at Felstead Security. They survived the attack. But it's clear that someone in this office gave them up.
With all due respect.
A little piece of trivia. Felstead Security was actually the writer's office, the building that Jack escaped from. Jack and Audrey escaped from in the episode that came before this. Was our writer's room, and Jack runs by the different offices of the writers and producers. And so we had our office painted like Felstead Security for about 6 weeks. It felt like Felstead.
And we were looking for a way to escape, I think, during some of those weeks.
I think we acted out some of those scenes when we were writing. And came up with the idea, production that came up with the idea. This is great. You have Marianne in the foreground. I think she's going to get caught in that scene, that moment.
Mr.
Mr. Driscoll, what's going on?
Go with these men.
What for?
You're under arrest, Gavin.
You've been passing classified information.
What?
It's a great look.
Take her to holding.
Yes, ma'am. Holding? Miss Driscoll, what are you doing? Miss Driscoll, I haven't done anything. Miss Driscoll, this is a mistake. What is happening?
I almost saw a smile there. It was almost on the verge of a smile for Marianne.
Yeah, her plan worked. We were working at the bikini bar around the corner, and Joel and some of the guys came in for a drink, and we got to talking, and...
I'm married, so I would never go to a place like that. I don't know about you, Steve.
I'm in the same situation that Peter's in. We're both happily married men. Actually, I've known Joel and Bob for about 15 years. We worked together on a show called The Commish for ABC. And Peter, how did you know Joel?
I actually worked with Joel on La Femme Nikita for 3 years. And worked with Alberta Watson for the same amount of time when she was on La Femme Nikita.
She would leave it on a system like this?
She didn't just leave it. It was encrypted.
Yeah, with a Bainbridge algorithm.
Bainbridge algorithm.
We have come up with a lot of algorithms. We had a Blowfish algorithm, a Bainbridge algorithm.
Etudes algorithm.
I have no idea what an algorithm is. I know what a Blowfish is, but I don't know what an algorithm is. That sounds kind of neat, though.
The message was sent from it while you were there. Somebody set me up. That's the only explanation I can think of.
Tell me how that's possible.
Someone backed into my system through a subnet, planted something.
That's the first thing we checked. None of them were compromised. Let's stop playing games. Thousands of people's lives are at stake. Where are the people who control the override?
I don't know. That's what I was working on.
Who did you send the message about Jack to?
I didn't. Miss Driscoll... I would never betray our country or endanger people's lives. You know that.
Is it the same contact who coordinated the attempt on Jack and Audrey's life at Felstead Security?
I don't know. It wasn't me.
I learned my lesson today with Sherrick, and I am no longer going to err on the side of caution in these interrogations. Do you get my meaning?
I don't know what to say.
This scene, this interrogation scene, leads us to one of the mainstays of 24, which is the torturing of people who we need to get information from.
Eric, Miss Driscoll.
She did a great job. Really did a great job.
That taser thing looks like it would hurt.
Please stop. If you want it to stop, you tell me where the Dobson override is and who.
I don't think anybody knows where it is, other than Marwan.
I think the Dobson override was hiding with the Bainbridge algorithm, wasn't it? Somewhere by the...
By the old substation.
Substation in Torrance. Mike Losef, who is another one of our writers, who is a computer genius, actually a professor of computer science. Most of that stuff comes from him because, you know, he knows enough about the real thing to make it sound real. So there are a lot of times where we'll get to a point in a scene or something and we need a line. We just write Losef to supply, and then he'll give us the techno stuff that we need.
Either that or we'll flag him in the hall or run into his office.
I can break her in time if she's guilty.
According to Scott, there is no way that this could be a mistake.
I agree, it's hard evidence. But I've known Sarah for 8 months and she doesn't fit the profile.
How do you want to handle it?
I'll watch for a few more minutes, then I'll go back in.
I'll brief Jack.
I love the fact that she says, Erin Driscoll says, I don't think Sarah's the mole. And then she says, but I'm going to watch for about another 5 minutes and then I'll go in. That's CTU for you. And I love the low-tech Jack working at this computer that really has no bells and whistles and the beers in the fridge. And then you sort of jump to CTU and they have everything at their disposal. And I love the fact that Jack is really at the helm of this thing and working out of this real rat hole of an apartment.
I love the fact that somebody's drinking a beer. We very rarely show anybody eating or drinking anything on this show.
Well, Jack still hasn't had a drink
gone,
and
gone to the bathroom.
Eat anything,
nobody,
gone to the bathroom.
Right.
Tony hasn't. He's only been in for an hour.
Your father's sending someone over to pick you up, take you back to CTU.
He was pouring his beer into a Chicago Cubs cup, which, since we're not in Chicago, I mean, maybe that's Tony's background, his affiliation. The Cubbies.
And he's a soccer fan also.
Yeah, none of the writers, as far as I know, are from Chicago, so it was either that or what props had lying around.
I think it's what props had lying around. I love this scene between these two.
I've been there. I could help. I'm considered a traitor to this country. My wife left me. So how are you going to help me, huh, Jack?
This was, the interior was on stage. Yeah. So we built this. Obviously the exterior, which we saw them go to, was a practical location, which is something we do fairly often, establish a real location and then build the interior. We did that with the home that Baruz and the Araz family had. We established that in a real neighborhood, but we built the house on stage. It gives us obviously the control that we need, and it's also, in many ways, it can prove to be cheaper to build than it is to shoot in a practical location in terms of the travel costs that are taken up when you have to bring the trucks and personnel and all that kind of stuff out, the permits, the time. We can generally get these things done quicker if we're on stage.
So how did this happen?
I was working in the yard and backed into a nail that sticks out of our gate.
This looks like a gunshot wound.
I'm afraid it was nothing that exciting, Doctor.
It was my fault. I was supposed to fix that gate last week.
All right. You're gonna need a tetanus shot. And I'll stitch it up.
Thank you, Doctor.
Yeah, I'll be right back.
All right, so the doctor is definitely not buying the backing into a nail. Dina said, I mean, he's certain that it's a bullet wound, and she senses that he's suspicious.
What's going on?
He said something to the nurse.
Did they make a phone call?
Not that I could see.
Did she?
No.
Good.
I think this whole storyline of the family was, the reaction from people has been really pretty interesting, because I think they have been able in some respects to separate the fact that, you know, she and her husband work for a, or are part of a terrorist organization, And I think the audience has really gotten into the family dynamic that's going on here, which, if you could somehow separate out the terrorist part of it, is a pretty interesting dynamic in and of itself. The notion that you have a teenage kid who ultimately is moving toward his own level of independence. You know, many people have experienced that in their own lives with their own children. Usually they're not shooting each other, but...
Wait a second, McLennan Forrester. They're the defense contractors that design the override devices controlling the power plants.
Yeah, well, he's not there anymore, but he freelances for them and he's definitely still in L.A.
How do you know that?
Because he's trying to leave the city. We just found out he scheduled a chopper to meet him in Van Nuys in 15 minutes.
I thought all air traffic had been grounded.
It is. He must have some well-connected friends.
He got a special clearance.
Son of a bitch. Where in Van Nuys?
The helipad at the Larchmont building.
Okay, I'm going to want you to ground his flight, but not until I get there. I don't want him to see me coming.
Jack, they're here.
Can you make it in time?
I'm going to try. Get your things. We got to go.
This actual story stayed pretty much the same from first draft to shooting script, story-wise.
Yeah, which is, in a way, kind of unusual for us. Usually the stories change drastically, which is the main reason that we do as much rewriting as we do. But no, this one did stay fairly much intact.
Yeah, I think we went off with a good story on this one.
Again, as we said, that the exterior of that house was a real exterior, a real house, and then we make the cut on Tony opening the door and come in, and he's entered the set.
I love Tony in the split screen there, because you see that he's struggling with this, knowing that he's going to be dragged back into it, and he's making a decision whether he wants to do it or not.
What are you going to try and handle by yourself?
Don't worry about it. It's covered.
Jack, it'd be pretty stupid of me to let you die right after I risk my life trying to save you. Use my help.
Yeah.
All right, let's go.
And again, I think that Tony's decision to go help Jack is based on their level of relationship. And I probably at some level that character also recognizes that, you know, the bell goes off and the fire trucks go and you do it, so a certain amount of it is instinct, and he might even realize that maybe this is what he needed to get out of the doldrums that he was in.
Actually, good directing there on that scene as well. It's the look back to the girlfriend at the end wasn't scripted. That was a really good little moment where Tony makes that decision and leaves.
And I think that's also gets to one of the sort of underlying themes of the show, which is that for people like this who do this kind of work, personal relationships, you know, almost always take a back seat, almost always suffer because of what they do. And I think you could see, yeah, I think you could see that in the look between Tony and his girlfriend, you can tell that she's not happy with him leaving, but he goes anyway.
Just something to numb the arm so that I can close the wound.
Okay.
I really wish you let me admit you. This one is serious. There's a chance of an infection here.
No, doctor, please. Do whatever you can and we'll leave. Bruce, where are you going?
I'll be right back, Mom.
Mom, the police are here.
Did you call the police?
This is a gunshot wound.
I told you it wasn't.
Then why are you acting so strangely?
Oh, let's go.
She didn't leave. You need treatment. Susan, get some. Wait.
I think we were those doctors on the wall. Those pictures of those doctors on the wall that they passed by. Do you remember at the beginning of the season?
I was the chief of thoracic surgery, I think.
Yeah. At the beginning of the season, we took those pictures wearing doctor's coats. I just realized that now. That's where they ended up.
Again, a lot of the reaction we got from people about this particular moment in the episode was that almost despite themselves. They found themselves kind of rooting for Baruz and Dina to get away. Again, she's part of this terrorist group, but many people in the audience did find that the relationship between her and her son transcended that aspect of their lives, and they were into the mother-son relationship.
Marianne?
What is it, Edgar?
About an hour ago, you asked me to bump up your security clearance. I was a little busy with the override, but I finally got it for you.
Great, thanks. What?
You'll need to pick a password. I set up the screen on server 5. There you go. You need to use the same password as the one that unlocks your system files.
Okay.
Edgar to the rescue. I think that was password was Cronish. Cronish 1, I think it was. Just a little piece of trivia.
I hope my kids can't tap into that.
Nice screensaver. 6 nuclear power plants melting down. That's a screensaver.
I have a lot of work to do.
It is getting incredibly tedious, Edgar, to have to remind you repeatedly that I could step into Joseph's office any moment and have you fired.
Finally standing up for himself, Edgar.
Yes, Edgar's making his move here. He's tired of getting humiliated by Marianne.
But he needs Curtis to escort him up. He's too afraid to do it on his own, which is great.
Sorry to interrupt.
What is it?
You got the wrong person. Sarah's not guilty of anything.
How do you know?
Because I just sneaked into Marianne's system. She used Sarah's to communicate outside of CTU. Made it look like Sarah was the one.
It's not possible.
Sarah's workstation was isolated from the subnet.
She didn't use the subnet.
How'd she get through?
She was a plain old AC power line.
What?
That's the last place anybody would ever look. Plus, it has plenty of bandwidth to carry the signal.
Where is she?
Now, Curtis loves this because Curtis and Marianne...
Curtis and Marianne had a relationship, and so he never trusted her to begin with. So this, in a way, is Curtis proving to everybody that Marianne was up to no good from the very beginning.
Impound the car, strip and search it. I got her.
That really was great.
What I liked about that moment was kind of a misdirect, I think. You know, we're used to... We probably might have expected that Marianne would have gotten blown up in the car or something, and I think that seeing the other CTU guy get it was kind of a surprise.
No, McLennan Forster has special ordinance. The paperwork was sent.
I know, but the order was superseded.
By who?
Department of Defense.
You're going to fly me out of here.
please, sir.
Now! Get in. Let's get us in the air and fly east.
What's great about this is it's really our two actors and no stuntmen when a real helicopter going.
Put your hands on the roof of the truck. The people I know, they'll pay you. Shut up! I got his cell phone. Bring me the bag. Put your hands behind your back.
Another little moment of humor coming up.
Who are you guys? Police? FBI?
Actually, I'm currently unemployed.
I'll make it worth your while.
Put him in the back.
Come on.
Too easy. They got their man, but it was too easy.
He's dead, Jack.
Stay tuned.
Thank you all for listening. We hope that you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.